From Quality Radio Productions, it's another edition of the Upstate Radio Theater. An hour of sounds from the Golden Age of Radio coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open the hour with an episode of The Henry Morgan Show, starring the famous comedian and satirist Henry Morgan. This was the second of two radio programs which he hosted during radio's golden era. The first, Here's Morgan, was a series of 15-minute satirical commentaries, often interspersed with some unusual novelty records, many of those records supplied by Spike Jones and his City Slickers. That series ran in the early and mid-1940s on the Mutual Broadcasting System. In the fall of 1946, Morgan was awarded a weekly half-hour program on ABC, the program consisting of various comedic sketches, satirical sketches, and some unusual musical bits. That series ran from 1946 to 1947. In 1949, the series was revived on NBC Radio in the fall of 1949, running through the spring of 1950. We have an episode of the NBC version of The Henry Morgan Show from March 14th of 1950, with a cast including Arnold Stang and Art Carney, among others. The Quest Pests strike again. Who are the Quest Pests? You'll find out as you listen to and enjoy this episode of The Henry Morgan Show on the Upstate Radio Theater.
The Henry Morgan Show. Yes, the Henry Morgan Show with Arnold Stang, Bert Kelton, Art Carney, Milton Caden's Orchestra, directed by Norman Collier, the Billy Williams Quartet, and me, Ed Herlihy. And here's the star of the Henry Morgan Show, standing on his favorite corner in front of the cigar store.
Good evening, anybody. Here's Morgan. This coupe is magnificent. Thank you. I read a very interesting article the other day in a magazine. It was called What to Do Till the Doctor Comes. And it was full of tips on first aid, and I thought that I'd pass them on to you in case you decide to injure yourself while listening to this program. Now, the article stresses that most serious accidents occur in your home. The best way to prevent these accidents is to leave your home and live with somebody else. Then, of course, it'll be his home, and the accident will happen to him. Now, what to do in case of an accident? Well, let's take a common, ordinary accident, a broken leg, let's say. While waiting for the doctor, do what this article says. The first thing it says is, when you have a broken leg, lie down. Well, it's good to know. It's good to know. If you broke your leg and hadn't read that, you might go out dancing. That would be very bad, since when the doctor came, you wouldn't be home. Next hint. It says, remember, in case of a broken leg, do not change the position of the leg. That is, if it's the left leg, leave it on the left side. Now, it may happen that you're confused as to how to tell if a person has a broken leg. Now, the simplest way to find out is ask him. Now, if he says, yes, I just told you what to do. If he says, no, I do not have a broken leg, just let him lie there. Of course, there may be a more serious injury, such as, for example, a fractured skull. This isn't too common. Since the average person needs a fractured skull like a hole in the head, they don't have any. What did I say there? Nothing. Well, the main thing to remember in case of an accident is don't lose your head. Because if you lose your head, your necktie will keep sliding off. Oh, excuse me. Here comes my friend Gerard. Hello, Gerard.
Oh, yeah.
Say, Gerard, last week I promised to help you with your income tax return. Did you fill it out?
Yeah, I did. Here it is. Look there.
Let's see. This looks okay.
Wait a minute. You put yourself down for an old age exemption.
Yeah.
Well, you're not over 65.
Who's to know?
Well, they could check up on you. They may send an investigator around to your house. What'll you do?
So I'll have my landlord answer the door and say he's me.
Yes, but even your landlord isn't 65.
So let them take him to jail.
You'd let an innocent man go to jail for you?
Yeah, only temporarily.
What do you mean temporarily?
Only till I'm 65.
Cross that out. Now, what's this deduction? Wife's name, Jane. You're not married.
Who's to know?
Well, they can investigate, Gerard. They might come to your house and want to see your wife.
So I'll have my landlord's wife see them.
Her name's Jane?
Margaret.
Well, the blank says Jane. They'll see it's a lie.
So let them throw her in jail with her husband.
No, Gerard, you have to put down that you're single.
Then you better cross out the 11 kids.
You're ridiculous, Gerard.
What's ridiculous about a man of 65 having 11 kids?
Well, I'll cross it out anyway. Let's see now. Line 7, expenses. Line 8, income. You subtract 7 from 8 and you get your... Gerard, what's this? You made out a check for only a dollar.
Sure, I subtracted 7 from 8.
But that's all wrong. Gerard, you're kidding yourself. Why are you fighting so hard against paying your income tax?
Because it's a waste.
A waste?
Sure, look, Hank, I figured out that since I'm working, I paid exactly $3,620 in taxes.
So where's the waste?
And I read someplace that that's exactly the salary paid to an income tax inspector.
Well, where's the waste?
So if I don't pay my income tax, he ain't got nothing to inspect. No tax inspector, no waste.
I give up. See you around, Gerard.
Likewise.
Well, better get over to NBC or I'll be 65 years too late for the broadcast. Taxi! Hey, taxi! Good evening, anybody. This program is always on the lookout for new and exciting personalities, and so each week we're going to choose what we think is the man of the week. So... our man of the week for tonight is a very well-known basketball star, and I'd like you to meet him now. Ladies and gentlemen, Slim Carney. Slim, you play center for State College, don't you? What'd you say?
That's right.
Well, Slim, I guess you know why you're our man of the week. It's because of your spectacular playing last Friday. What a game! A real thriller. Suppose you tell us about it, Slim. Yes, but what were some of the highlights of the game?
I got fouled.
Yes, you did. Well, Slim, let's find out a little more about you and where you come from.
You see that guy foul me?
Yeah. Yes, it did. But, Slim, about you, basketball fans would probably like to know more about your personal life.
Twice.
What?
He foul me twice.
Well, we'll come back to that. Right now, let's get on with more about you. Now, you stand 6'4" in your stocking feet. My gosh, you're a tall fella, aren't you? What did you say?
Oh, that ain't so tall.
Yeah. Well, Slim, do you have a word for your many kid fans who plan to go out for basketball themselves one day?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
All right, Slim, read it.
Huh?
Read it.
Oh. Kids.
Basketball.
Like so many other of our great American, sports is a game which requires mental ability and great stamina. Play. clean, and play hard. Let this be your... What's the word?
Credo.
Let this be your credo.
Did you see the guy follow me?
Yes. Thank you, Slim Carney. Yes, you're quite right. Well, we've got the Billy Williams Quartet back with us tonight, so if the microphone is bolted down, we'll turn them loose on the Gaucho Serenade.
Serenade the gaucho, serenade the gaucho, serenade. Ta-la-la-ta-ta-ta-la-la. Oh, the gaucho, serenade. 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 Every night when the moon shines bright down on the Rio de Janeiro, comes a jet with a maro instrument and a colorful sombrero. Then he sings and a melody brings us into the play. It's called a gaucho serenade. La 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 la. Si, senor, he's happy to the door on a patio to find him. Si, senor, he will open the door leaving happiness behind him. All the sweet senoritas hurry out to join the parade. And hear the gaucho serenade. La 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 la.
Every night when the moon is bright down in Rio de Janeiro, comes a jet with a mellow instrument and a colorful sombrero. Then he sings in a melody grows so tenderly played. It's called the gaucho serenade. La 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 la. Si, senor, the habit of a barn, a party, oh, you'll find it. Si, senor, you'll come to the door, leaving happiness behind. All the sweet senoritas hurry out to join the parade. And
the
gaucho serenade.
Oh, the gaucho serenade. The gaucho serenade. The gaucho serenade. Oh, the gaucho serenade. 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 The gaucho serenade.
Gentlemen, we have invited to our studio tonight the eminent Viennese professor, Dr. Heinrich von Morgan, to discuss heredity. Dr. von Morgan has written several important articles on biology, physiology, and psychology for the Book of Knowledge. With him this evening is his younger brother, an eminent authority in his own right, Dr. Willy von Morgan. Good evening, Dr. Heinrich von Morgan.
I do.
And good evening, Dr. Willy von Morgan.
I saw.
Now, Dr. von Morgan, about this question of human behavior, what is the most important factor in the development of the personality of an individual? Would you say heredity or environment?
Heredity.
Why?
I can't say that a word. It's a very hard word.
I see. And you, Dr. Willy von Morgan?
Environment.
Show up.
Environment is important because...
Environment. I'm never going to take you no place no more.
Gentlemen. The controversy over the influence of environment... I mean environment... was really started...
You see, you didn't say it right.
Environment.
Wrong. Mister, tell him again.
Environment.
Yeah, environment.
No, don't. Ridiculous. Environment. And next time, don't wear such dirty pants. Next question, please.
Yes, and now the present controversy over genetics...
And fix your tie.
Yeah, I know.
Go ahead, please.
The present controversy, as I understand it, is based on the Mendelian theory of genetics.
Dirty pants, you got that.
Dr. von Morgan, do you agree with what Mendel said?
I don't know what he said.
He said that the characteristics of crossbred offspring reappear in predetermined proportions in successive generations with definite regenerative patterns.
He said that?
Yes. I gather you disagree with that theory. How do you feel, Dr. Billy Van Morgan?
I have a little headache, thank you.
He means about a question, stupid. And for the headache, take a bromo-seltzer.
Oh, the question? Well,
take two bromo-seltzers and fix your tie, dirty pants. Next question, please.
Yes. Now, I understand that you both have done quite a bit of experimenting in crossbreeding. Have you ever experimented with guinea pigs?
Guinea pigs. Oh, sure. I put two male and two female guinea pigs in a cage, and then later I take the two male guinea pigs away and put them in a separate cage.
Oh, and what happened?
They bit me. They was real mad. You remember, Billy?
Yeah, I did.
I see. Now, my final question, gentlemen, concerns the major problem confronting biologists. Whether basic characteristics are carried by the gene.
Gene who?
No, Heinrich, not gene who. He means the genes. You know, the little round things that are schlitzing around in the blood.
What?
You know, the little things that are schlitzing in the blood.
Maybe in your blood are schlitzing little things, not in my blood.
In your blood, too.
What's your set?
I say in your blood, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I gotta go home. I feel sick.
No, Heinrich, the genes, you know, they carry the hereditity. Like if Mama has light brown hair and Papa, too, it's in the genes.
I see. Genes with the light brown hair.
Billy, we go home. This man is an imbecile.
Good night, Dr. Van Morgan and Dr. Van Morgan.
And by the way, there's a homo delta.
Hello.
When Verdi wrote the Anvil Chorus for his opera Il Trovatore, there were a couple of things he didn't know about it. One thing he didn't know was that Bernie Green would ever make an arrangement of it, and another was that Milton Kadem's orchestra would play it, and the third thing was that Norman Clothier would have the nerve to get up and conduct it. All right, blacksmiths.
La 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 la
The next part of our program is dedicated... The next part of our program is dedicated to our children listeners. And, their name is Legion. So, for little Danny and Susie Legion, we present our kids' quiz program. Would you introduce it, Ed?
Oh, certainly, Henry. Ladies and gentlemen, here is that new and exciting quiz program with its panel of brilliant youngsters, the Quest Pests. And here he is, the kids' favorite quizmaster, Uncle Joe Morgan. No!
Good afternoon, kiddies, and hello to you, Mom and Dad. It's time to introduce our panel of young experts. Mary Jane, let's start with you.
My name is Mary Jane Fleming. I'm 6 years old, and I live in Jackson Heights, and I go to public school number 24, and I'm in the second grade, and the name of my teacher is Miss Kulbish, and I'm 6 years old.
Oh, dear. 6 years old, eh?
And my teacher's is Miss Kulbish.
Miss Kulbish.
I hate it.
Oh, now, I'll bet Miss Kulbish doesn't hate you.
I bet she does.
Well, but why?
Because my name is Mary Jane Fleming, and I'm 6 years old.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Now,
in the second grade, Miss Kulbish hates me.
Miss Kulbish may not be the only one, you know. Well, let's get on to our other experts. Polly?
My name is Polly Jordan, and I'm 9 years old, and I'm taking a postgraduate course at the University of Chicago.
Good.
At the University of Chicago Law School.
Well.
I already graduated law school once, but I'm taking the course over again.
How come?
Mommy says it keeps me off the street.
And, of course, Mommy knows best, doesn't she? Little shyster. Well. Let's get on to the next member of our panel.
My name is Lefty Schultz. And I'm 12 years old and I don't go to school.
Oh, but surely you must go to some school.
Make me.
Well, yes. You say your name is Lefty. You have another name beside that one.
Yeah, lots of them. Knuckles, Duke, Babyface, Harry the Heist, Nutsy, Solly the Shiv, Arnold the Blood.
Yes, well, what we'd like to know is what your family calls you.
You're kidding.
All right, Lefty.
Go ahead, ask me a question. Ask me why they set me up.
Well,
the judge was laying for me.
Well, we...
The jury was loaded, and so was the judge.
No.
Lefty. They made me a political football.
Lefty,
answer
please.
This one, Judge. What are you doing in Atlantic City tonight?
Lefty, your parole is showing. Well, let's calm down and introduce our last expert, and he is... Well, he's my own little son, Tommy. Why, Tommy, my own little son, what are you doing here?
But, Daddy, you're the one who got me.
Shut up. Tommy boy. Tommy boy, introduce yourself.
My name is Tommy Morgan, and I am 9 years old, and my daddy says that we can buy a house as soon as he makes enough money on this program. And the way he plans to...
All right, Tommy boy. Well, folks, there you have our panel of Quest Pests for today. My own little son, Tommy's on the panel, but there'll be no playing favorites. Well, kids, let's get on to our first question. Now, the one who answers this question correctly receives $50 in cash. Now, the question is, who was president in 1924? Well, let's call on my son first, shall we? Tommy?
I didn't have my hand up, Daddy. Uncle Joe, I have my hand up.
I know, Polly. Give Tommy a chance.
I didn't have my hand up, Daddy.
Tommy.
In 1924, the president was Calvin Coolidge.
I didn't say president of the United States, Polly. Who was the president of Guatemala in 1924? Tommy, you know.
I didn't have my hand up, Daddy.
Tommy, you look
The president of Guatemala in 1924 would be Manuel Estrada Cabrera.
Well, Tommy?
Daddy, I think the president of Guatemala in 1924 was Manuel Estrada Cabrera.
Cabrera! He's right! That's right! Good boy, Tommy. You win $50 in cash for that one. Oh, that kid, he's a wonderful boy.
Uncle Joe!
What is it, Polly?
That's what I said. Cabrera.
You said Cabrera. Tommy said Cabrera. Rah, rah. See? All right. Now I will describe a certain well-known animal to you, and you are to tell me what it is. Ready?
A baboon.
Wait till I ask the question, Tommy. Okay, kids, tell me what animal this is. It weighs 400 pounds, has a snub nose, hook-like feet, and a saculated stomach. What is that?
Microbes.
Mary Jane, I don't believe you've ever seen this animal.
I don't believe you've ever seen Miss Corbett.
Possibly not. I don't. Anybody know the right answer? Tommy?
I didn't have my hand up, Daddy. Uncle Joe.
Come on, Tommy. Tommy, how does a sheep go?
Baa.
And how does a cannon go?
Boom.
Now put them together.
Sheep cannon.
No, it's ba and boom, ba and boom.
Uncle Joe!
Will you shut up, Polly? Tommy almost had it. Come on, Tommy lad, ba and boom.
Ba boom!
Ba boom, is that absolutely right? Oh, that boy is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful kid. Now, kids, this one has to do with personalities. For $50, what is the name of my wife? Tommy?
I didn't have my hand up, Dad.
Tommy, the name of my wife, your mother.
Nobody could be that stupid, not even your kid.
Lefty.
Lefty?
What did you say?
Is Mommy's name Lefty?
Tommy, perhaps if you look at a picture of Mommy, her name will come to you. Here, look at this picture in my wallet.
Uncle Joe, is that your wife?
Yes, why?
She looks like Miss Corbish.
Well...
Program once and we all met her. I remember her name now.
Oh, yes, I remember too, Uncle Joe.
Oh, your wife. Yeah, I remember her.
Uncle Joe, I know your wife.
I know your wife.
I know it.
Well, Tommy?
I didn't have my hand up, Dad.
I didn't have my hand up. Take a guess!
We know. I know it.
Well, since... Nobody knows the answer to that one. I'll have to send the money to the personality of the question. So that's $50 going to my wife. Well, here's another question. Now, this one, you're to name your favorite movie star, okay?
Gregory Peck.
Lawrence Olivier.
George Rapp.
Tommy?
Sonny Tuck.
Tommy's right. Another $50 for you, son. Nice going. And now, kids, for our problem corner. Each week we have... Yes, Mary Jane?
I hate Miss Corbett.
I know.
I hate your little boy, too.
Well, so do I. Now for our problem letter of the week chosen at random. I just reach in here and pick one out, and there we are. Oh, here it is. This letter says, I am a boy 9 years old, and my daddy has a children's quiz program. And he makes me help him out in his money-making schemes. But when it comes to splitting up the loot, he never gives me... Well, kids, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today.
So I'll read the rest of it, chum.
No, that's all we have...
Daddy, is Mommy's name Coolidge? Ow! Daddy, I had my hand up!
And so did I. That's all we have time for now, but wait till I get you home. So long, kids! Listen again to this lesson. Mortimer, same corner for those guys who are next week at the same time. Thank you and good night.
This is the Henry Morgan Show with Arnold Stang, Bert Kelton, Art Carney, Joan Lazor, David Anderson, Milton Caniff's Orchestra, directed by Nola Cody and the Billy Williams Quartet. Morgan's back in this corner next week, same time. Henry Morgan Show produced by Kenneth McGregor, Ed Hurley. He's saying good night.
An NBC broadcast of The Henry Morgan Show, The Quest Pests Strike Again, from March 14th of 1950. That program didn't contain any sponsorship messages, but Morgan's ABC series of 1946 and 47 was infamous for Morgan's constant ripping on the sponsor, the Eversharp Corporation, and that was not the first nor the last time that Morgan incurred the wrath of various companies for his highly critical remarks regarding their various products. A true innovator in comedy and satire, Henry Morgan, he would go on to a much more successful career in television with series such as What's My Line, I've Got a Secret, and his frequent appearances on the Hollywood squares. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. The address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website, where you can find much more info about the radio theater, including detailed program listings, a chance to stream this and previous editions of the radio theater anytime, anywhere. This is episode number 1524, by the way. And the address of the blog and website, well, that would be qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. For our final offering this hour, we have an episode of Hall of Fantasy. This was a syndicated series from the early 1950s. In much the same vein as programs like Lights Out, Suspense, Escape, The Mysterious Traveler, telling tales of the supernatural, the supernormal, the unexpected and the unknown. This is program number 7 in the series, released for syndication January 5th of 1953. It's entitled The Hangman's Rope.
And now, The Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of
The Hangman's Rope.
From our right. We better take a look.
Yeah.
I hope nothing...
Arnold!
Huh?
Look!
Hanging from that tree, swinging back and forth, it's a man.
The Hall of Fantasy will present The Hangman's Rope in just a moment. And now for our story, an original tale of fantasy entitled The Hangman's Rope.
A legend, you know, a tale about the hangman. For 23 years, the executioner for the crown. Jack Ketch was his name, Governor. Jack Ketch.
I remember we were on our way back from the lake, Jim and Carol and I. And for some reason, we started back to the city later than usual. We hadn't been driving for more than half an hour when one of those sudden spring storms...
Now, where did that come from?
Someone said there might be a storm tonight, but I thought we'd be home before it broke.
Well, we'd better put the wipers on.
We started back too late tonight.
What was it that held us up, Jim?
I don't know. A lot of things. When I finally looked at my watch, I couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah. Arnold, look out. There's a man right in front of the car.
You stay here, Carol. Come on, Arnie. We'd better take a look.
Yeah, right. We didn't hit him, did we?
I don't think so.
Now, why would someone be out in the middle of the road on a night like this?
Oh, there's a lot of crazy people in this world, Arnie.
He must have been one of them.
Yeah, I'm getting soaked. Now, he was just about here. I can't understand. Jim, look.
Where?
There. There beside the tree. I don't see anything.
Huh. I guess I was wrong. You know, for a minute I thought I saw someone hanging from that tree.
Oh, you must have been mistaken. You know, I can't figure this out, Arnie. That guy was out here on the road right in front of us. I saw him just as plain as day. Now there's no one around.
Yeah. We'd better get back to the car.
Yeah, that's for sure. There's no sense looking back at that tree, Arnie. There's nothing back there.
I don't know. I thought I saw someone swinging their back and forth with a rope around his neck.
Oh, no, you couldn't have. Maybe it was some kind of optical illusion. It could have been a shadow or a branch or anything.
Yeah, that's right. Anything. Well, here's the car.
Oh, you two must like it out there in the rain.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not. All the time that you were out there in the rain, the man you almost hit was talking to me.
What did you say?
You heard me.
Oh, now, sis, wait a minute. I looked back at the car a couple of times. I didn't see anyone talking to you.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with your eyes, then. I asked him if we couldn't give him a lift. And he said, no, he only had a little distance to go.
Carol, honey, this is the truth. We didn't see anyone near this car.
No, look, I can prove it. He insisted I take this... Oh, that's strange.
What?
He was such an unusual man. Not American. He insisted that I accept a ring from him. Practically forced it on me. I put it in my pocket, and now it's gone. And in its place, there's a funny little piece of rope. Shaped like a hangman's noose.
I knew Carol wasn't lying to us. I asked her if she would let me have the little piece of rope. After I dropped them off at their place, I went home, took it out, and set it on the table. I can't explain it, but there was something about that rope which seemed old. It was made of hemp, the kind of rope you would imagine Jack Ketch might have used 250 years ago when he was the hangman. That night, as I slept, my sleep was troubled. In my dreams, there was a huge black gallows. I saw a man climbing the stairs to his death. He reached the top and stood there. Standing beside him was a black hooded man. He raised his hand and... the trap door sprung open. There was a scream. And then I saw this man swinging back and forth. His face was hidden from me, yet there was something strangely familiar about him. I felt as if I knew him quite well.
We'll return to the tale of the hangman's rope in just a moment. Back now to our tale of fantasy entitled The Hangman's Rope.
When I awoke from my dream, I couldn't get back to sleep. For in the black blankness of sleep, I had come into contact with death. As the morning approached, I fell into a nervous sleep. I was awakened. Hello?
Arnie, this is Carol. Could you meet Jim and me for lunch today?
What time?
About one.
I hope you'll forgive me if I don't sound awake, Carol. I just couldn't sleep last night.
I didn't sleep either, Arnie. I'll see you at one.
Then I guess I wasn't the only one who missed out on sleep last night, huh?
That's right. I don't know what it was, but I had the craziest dream. When I woke up, I couldn't get back to sleep.
But that's what happened to me, too.
What kind of dreamer was it, Carol?
Well,
Everything was dark and gloomy. I seemed to be watching an execution, an old-time execution. Maybe 200 or 300 years old. A man walked up the steps of the gallows. Another man was there with a black hood over his head. He raised his arm. The trap door opened. And the
man swung back and forth. And there was something familiar about him. Isn't that right?
Yes, but how did you know?
Because my dream was the same as yours, sis. Exactly the same.
Jim's and my vacations were due the following week. We decided to spend it up at the lake, where his family had a cottage. Carol said she might be able to join us on the last weekend, but not before that. Jim and I left the following Friday night.
Well, I can certainly use this vacation. Maybe we can catch a few northerns this time, huh?
Maybe. Is your family going to come up here while we're there?
No. Carol will be up the last weekend, that's all.
Well, then I guess we'll have the place to ourselves, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, why are you stopping here?
Last Sunday night, this is where we stopped. I'm going to get out and take a look at the side of the road for a minute.
Oh, Arnie, why don't you forget about it?
I just want to check it, that's all. That's the tree, isn't it?
I think so.
On that limb. That's where I saw him hanging.
Oh, just thinking about it makes me nervous. Come on, let's go back to the car.
All right.
Carol said that while we were out of the car, she was talking to the fellow we saw.
If that's the case, I can't understand why we didn't see him, too. You know, Jim, there just wasn't enough time for him to get away from the car without our seeing him. Unless...
Unless what?
Unless he was never there.
Oh, but that could... Arnie! Look!
In the car seat, another little piece of rope. I could stop him. Jim threw the little noose out into the darkness. But a little piece of rope, an inanimate thing, coiled and twisted, which somehow seemed to be alive. We reached the cottage perhaps half an hour later, and though we were both disturbed by what had happened, still it didn't interfere with our sleep. The next day, we went out fishing early, had little luck, and were on our way back to the cottage when the woman who owned the property next door stopped us.
Good morning, Mr. Stanley.
Oh, good morning, Mrs. Bennett.
Out for the weekend?
Well, for the next 2 weeks. Oh, excuse me, Mrs. Bennett, this is Arnold Slade.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Slade.
Well, thank you. Same here.
You must be that young man that Carol's going to marry.
Yes, that's right.
She'll make you a fine wife, Mr. Slade. The reason I stopped you, Mr. Stanley, is this.
Mm-hmm.
There's something strange going on out here.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, the constable came by the other day and asked me if I'd seen any strangers here. A couple of people have died over on the other side of the lake. And the constable ain't been able to find out what happened.
How did these people die?
Well, that's what's so strange about it. Both of them were killed by hanging.
Hanging?
That's right. Old Mr. Taylor, who lived about a mile down by the shore, he was one of them. And he couldn't hardly walk. They found him swinging from a tree. But he was several feet off the ground. And nobody can figure out how he got up there.
What the woman had said frightened me. It seemed as if we were getting deeper and ever more deeply into something from which we would never be able to get away. That night, it was Saturday, Jim and I went out for a walk. It was a particularly dark night. The moon was obscured by clouds, and as we walked along, I could hear the chirping of many crickets. And occasionally a bullfrog's hoarse voice raised in protest.
Arnold, this thing has me worried.
In what way, Jim?
This whole thing. Last Sunday night and today when we stopped by the tree. And then what Mrs. Bennett told us.
I've been thinking about it, too.
Well, that's strange.
What?
The crickets have suddenly stopped. It's too quiet. Jim, it came from over there. We better take a look.
Yeah. It's too quiet, just as you said.
There must be something terribly wrong up here.
I hope nothing...
Arnold, go...
Huh?
Look. Hanging from that tree, swinging back and forth. It's a man.
What are we going to do?
We better cut him down.
No. We better call the authorities first.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Come on, Mrs. Bennett's got a phone. If we hurry, we may be able to get out a great deal of help to the authorities.
Jim, did you notice how high that branch was?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yes? Why, Mr. Stanley, it's you.
Mrs. Bennett, may we use your phone?
Well, I suppose so. Come in.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's in the other room.
Thanks.
What's the matter, Mr. Slade? It looks like something's happened to upset you, too.
Well, it certainly has.
The constable? Why, what's happened?
We were out for a walk.
Yes?
We heard a scream.
I think you'd better get out
of
here.
We ran to where the scream had come from.
We
found a man hanging from a tree.
That's right, hanging. Yes, we'll stay here at Mrs. Bennett's. Yeah, thanks.
Are what you're telling me the truth, young man?
That's the truth, ma'am.
Mr. Stanley... Is what Mr. Slade told me the truth?
I'm afraid it is.
Oh, then no one is safe around here. I wonder who it was.
What difference does that make, Mrs. Bennett? A man's been murdered.
It makes a lot of difference, Mr. Slade. If it was Bill Roberts, then it was just like the other two. I saw him just the other day, and he said someone was playing a joke on him, that he'd been sent a little piece of rope shaped in the form of a noose.
You are listening to the tale of The Hangman's Rope on this week's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now, back to our story, entitled The Hangman's Rope.
Little piece of rope. Both Jim and I stared at each other for a moment. It might be coincidence. We knew that, but it was difficult trying to make ourselves believe that. About half an hour later, the constable arrived.
You two found him, that right, Mr. Stanley?
That's right. We were out taking a walk. We heard a scream, and then we found him.
Can't make heads nor tails out of this. Three of them. Three deaths in 2 weeks, all the same way. They all received a little piece of rope just before they died.
A little piece of rope?
Yeah, that's right. I say all three. I ain't seen the body yet, but I have a pretty good idea who it is, Bill Roberts.
It's enough to make a person afraid of the dark, Constable.
Yeah, ain't it? Well, I want you two to take me to him.
I'll go, too.
No, you stay here. But... You stay off the phone.
Oh.
I don't want the rest of the people to hear anything about this, at least for the time being. Things are bad enough as it is. All right, come on, let's go. Now, remember what I said, Mrs. Bennett.
Don't you worry, none, Constable.
I hope that woman stays off the phone. The whole county will be in an uproar if she doesn't.
Do you, have any idea who's behind these deaths?
No, I haven't.
Funny thing, he was up so high. I don't see how he could have gotten up there by himself.
I only wish I had something to work on. Well, we'll see if he's just like the others in a little while. How far away was he?
There he is, Constable.
I want to get a look at his face. Yeah, I was afraid of that.
Who is it?
Bill Roberts.
But how did he get up there?
The branch is 20 feet off the ground. It'd take an acrobat to climb that tree. Bill wasn't any acrobat.
Well, how did he get up there?
I don't know. Three people received pieces of rope, and then a couple of weeks later, we find him hanging from a tree. You tell me the answer.
We cut him down, but it took almost an hour to get up on that branch to do it. We put him in the constable's car and drove him back to town. Before he left, we told him that we, too, had received the little gift, the noose of rope, which had been, in three instances, the forerunner of death. When we got back to the cottage, we had a bite to eat, and seeing as we weren't in the mood to sleep, we sat down to read. I picked up a little book I hadn't seen before and read it from cover to cover. It held an eerie fascination, and I wasn't able to put it down till the last page had been turned, the last word read. Jim?
Hmm?
Where did you get this book?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen it before. Why?
It looks like a first edition of 200 years ago.
Let me see it.
Here.
A short history concerning the mysterious reappearance of Jack Ketch, a hangman who served as executioner for 23 years.
I've never seen this book before. Well, then how did it get here?
I don't know. Jack Ketch. Say, he was the hangman in England who took too much pleasure in his work, isn't that right?
I think so.
How much of this did you read?
All of it. It's not very long.
And
this is what I got out of it. Before he died, the book says he had made some kind of a pact with an evil power. It seems they actually do have a written copy of that agreement somewhere in England. And there's his signature. And an illegible scrawl that no one has ever been able to decipher. The pact promises life after death for him in exchange for certain services. Then the book says that year after year, some rather mysterious deaths have occurred. They find the victims hanging from the branch of a tree. A tree almost impossible to climb. And the book also says that each of the murdered people received a little piece of rope before their deaths, identical to the ones Jack Ketch used as executioner. That is the warning. The warning of death to follow.
But that's impossible. The man's been dead for over 250 years.
That's right, he's dead. But the rest of the story, it's exactly the same thing that's happening to us. Two days later, in late evening, the rest of the story unfolded. Jim had gone down to the store to pick up some cigarettes. I'd been down to the shore doing a little fly casting and had started back up to the cottage. I was surprised at how quickly night had fallen. I wished that I'd brought along a flashlight. From somewhere across the lake, I heard the cry of a dog, and the sound of it filtered through and was carried along by the night air. For some reason, I became unaccountably nervous. I stopped walking. I felt someone was watching me. Then from the darkness of the trees, a man emerged.
Here now. Where be you going?
Well, back up to my cottage. I was doing some fly casting till night came.
Any luck?
No. I'd better be going.
No need to hurry you. Why? Nice out here, ain't it?
I suppose so.
Strange thing, you know. The little creatures. They stopped.
Little creatures?
That's right, Governor. Crickets and the frogs. They stopped talking.
Yes, they have.
You frightened of me, Governor?
Of course not. What are you laughing at?
You wouldn't understand it, Governor.
Is that you down there, Mr. Slade?
Yes, Mrs. Bennett.
Do you mind if I join you?
No, of course not.
Ah, good.
I'd better be going, eh, Governor? I'll see you another time.
Who are you talking to?
Oh, I don't know. He just stepped out of the darkness, and there he was.
Well, I guess he's gone now.
Yes, I guess he is.
Where's Mr. Stanley?
He went down to pick up some cigarettes. He should be back soon.
Well, the constable told me to tell you that he'd be out tonight.
Well, thank you.
Would
Would you mind walking me back to my place, Mr. Slade? It's rather frightening out here when it's this dark.
I'll be glad to.
That man you were talking to, what did he look like?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't see his face. He had an accent. It sounded like he might have come from London.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
I can't understand it. The crickets and frogs, they've been starting and stopping all night. They must be afraid of something.
Every time they stop...
What'd you say?
Every time they stop, something happens.
Arnold, where are you?
I'm walking Mrs. Bennett back to her cottage. Anything wrong?
No. I got back from the store and I was wondering where you were. It's just that I have a strange feeling that something is going to happen.
Let's go up to our place, Mrs. Bennett. Maybe the constable will want to see you, too.
That's a good idea. Land sakes, Mr. Slade. The strangest things have been happening out here lately.
Arnold!
We'll be right there, Jim.
Well, there's someone up here now. I thought it was...
Jim!
Something's wrong, Mr. Slade.
I don't know. Jim! What's the matter? Answer me!
From that tree, it's Mr. Stanley.
There is a legend, you know, a tale about the hangman. For 23 years, the executioner for the crown. Jack Ketch was his name, Governor.
Characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The Hangman's Rope, an episode of Hall of Fantasy, syndicated broadcast from January 5th, 1953. And that will bring this hour of Old Time Radio to a close. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. Join me again when you can for more great sounds from radio's golden era. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.